Hi, welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm Andrew Cadnack. Joining me is Sarah McFeeling and we're really excited about this, Rosie Waterland, author of The Anti-Cool Girl.
Hey, guys.
So this is, I just want to give, and I've already let you know, Rosie and Sarah and I know because we see the sales, but this is like one of the biggest books of the year for us. And this has been a big year. Like, you must be, this is insane what's going on at the moment.
I get, yeah, it's exciting. I mean, I always tell people I'm just relieved that it's not a total failure, like that it's at least sold some copies. I'm just like, phew, because, yeah, I mean, and anything outside of that, it's great. And HarperCollins tell me the numbers and you guys tell me the numbers. And, you know, I'm a first time author, so I'm always like, is that good? I don't know.
And it's difficult. And that's what memoirs are so difficult, is because criticism come from anything that you feel aware of. So if someone says like, I read your memoir. Like, that can mean so many things. That can mean, that can be the writing, you know, it can be, I didn't like the writing, or it can just be, yeah, your life doesn't interest me.
Yeah.
I mean, the good thing about it is those two elements aren't there, because anyone that's read that book straight away comes to me. People outside of the book industry will talk to me because I'm in the book industry.
Yeah.
Are you surprised by, I guess not the debate, but just the discussion that is now around your upbringing and your life? Or did you expect that if the book hit, that's, you know, obviously it might get people talking?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people, when they heard I was releasing a memoir, were A, like, what, she's only 29, like, why are you writing a memoir? And B, like, it's just going to be one long Bachelor recap. Like, I think that's what people were expecting. And so I think...
Which would have been cool.
Yeah, which, that would have been great. But I think people are, it's nice for me, not just to share my story, but also to show that I can write other stuff. And but I think also people are really surprised that a lot of people have said, like, I never would have expected from the stuff, because I mainly write comedy. A lot of people were surprised at some of the more serious parts of the book.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of your writing anyway, and I think I've heard you say this before, is quite bare bones, if
yeah.
you like, and you talk about yourself openly. So it was more, I guess, the challenge for you was to go that step further now and sort of express. And there is a lot of comedy in the book.
Yeah.
It's a very funny book, but yeah, express things that you probably could never have put in a blog about your family and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I've touched on my family before in articles I've done for Mamma Mia, but not in that much detail. And, you know, it was also weird and different for me to write something so long, and it was sort of it's like for the most part chronological, and coming from online where I just write, like, you know, 800 words a day, like, and I have like 1 hour deadlines, it was a huge adjustment to kind of write, you know, 90,000 words over months and months and months, and having to plan that out, and also having to write really kind of emotional, quite revealing stuff. Yeah.
Has your family read it?
Yeah, my sisters have read it. My mum has just recently read it. I was worried about her reading it. I wasn't going to let her read it. I didn't give her a copy. She ordered a copy from Booktopia.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, we are Australia's local bookstore.
So that's, she sneakily got her hands on one and...
online space.
Yeah. Damn you, online. And she, you know, I think she was concerned that she was going to be like the villain of the book. And I think reading it, she wasn't thrilled, but she was actually a lot more relieved after she read it than upset.
Well, there's never any point where anyone could doubt your love for your family in the book. Like,
yeah.
It would be so difficult, though. I'm just imagining, like, saying, so I'm going to say all this stuff. But...
Yeah. Well, I mean, I didn't let anyone read any of it in advance except my sisters. I gave them the chapters that they were in to read to make sure they were okay with it, and they were. My mum didn't read any of it beforehand. So, I mean, yeah, she was the main person I was worried about, and she's been okay about it. Her main problem was that she said I made her look slutty. She goes, I look slutty. And I said, Mum, there's a chapter in there where you chase us around with a butcher's knife and you're worried that you look slutty like that. Like, so, you know, she's taken it really well. Yeah.
And I think that's what you do really well in it as well. And like, this is a bizarre, now it feels like we're talking about characters, but it's a difficult way for you to represent, I still love these people, but this happened, and not to make anyone, like from the surface, I guess, if you go deeper, but no one as a victim or trivialise anything. Like, I'm in awe of how you've done that, because you don't, and when you read it, it's funny and it's sad, but at the same time, yeah, there is no, ultimately no victim, and you don't sort of feel like, well, Rosie, I think I understand your life a little bit. I think you're in a Stockholm syndrome. I think, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's incredibly difficult, but you've done it.
Well, yeah, it wasn't easy. I mean, I think a lot of kids who have had traumatic backgrounds like mine and, you know, difficult childhoods and abusive childhoods have incredible feelings of ambivalence towards their parents. Like, you love them, they're your parents, but on the other hand, they did these awful things and they put you through so much. And I've dealt with that ambivalence my whole life. And probably one of the hardest parts of the book was making sure that was in there, that I didn't want my parents to be the villains, but I also didn't want to sugarcoat anything that had happened or anything that they'd done. And well, I tried.
The thing I thought you did so, so well was being able to write about these horrific things and to always be one step away from making the reader laugh, like, regardless of what was going on. And, like, there was one point, without going into too much detail, where something fairly horrific was happening and you had that little toy.
Yeah.
And you were describing how you were just sitting there, you know, ignoring everything that was happening and opening this toy and imagining yourself rising like a diva. I was losing it. But I was also so just, you know, so horrified and so in sympathy with you.
Yeah.
Whilst crying from laughter.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was amazing how you did that. Was it difficult or is it easy for you to write about things with humour?
No, I think that's putting the humour in is what enables me to do it. I mean, I think I certainly think I'm probably more a comedy writer than anything else, but I think a lot of people who are funny generally have a darker side, and what lets them be funny and what lets them have that kind of light and that humor is because they've kind of built it up from having to deal with the other stuff. And so for me, it was like, there was no way I could have written this book without putting a joke on every page. Like, I think it would have been too much. And God, it would have been a bit heavy, to be honest. Like, it would have felt a bit self-indulgent if there weren't, like, laughs in there.
Well, yeah, and that's true. I mean, there's a
bit Dickensian.
Reminds me, and I think, yeah, like you said, all writers have a dark side. There's a line from Girls where Lena Dunham's character goes to the launch of a rival. And her rival is, her boyfriend has just committed suicide. And she hears about it and she goes, oh, that bitch.
Yeah.
Because now it's, you know, now she has something to mine. I mean, it is, even for the funniest writers, I guess, there is always a dark side because you need that dark to accentuate the light, don't you?
And there's something extra sharp about the kind of sense of humour that develops out of that crucible of, like, darkness.
Yeah.
Because it's got to be that much funnier to, like, lift your spirits.
So we're going to talk about funnier and being a comedy writer. Uh-huh. So this is a revelation. I've never seen a full episode of The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, but I have read your recaps and loved them and had no context. So did you feel, are you the first person to feel pressure, first writer to feel pressure about writing a book because of the success of what you write online? Like, when you think about it,
know if I'm the first, but I mean, I didn't feel pressure. I was kind of excited to show that I could do other stuff. It's a different kind of thing. Like, I mean, writing the Bachelor recaps, it's so anxiety inducing. I can't even tell you, like, because, you know, I get the episode a couple hours early, so I get it at 5 o'clock. It goes on TV at 7:30 and then my recap's up by 8:30. So I have to do the whole thing in 3.5 hours. And like, I can't even tell you, like, the anxiety that comes with waking up in the morning and knowing that by the end of the night you have to have written something that makes like hundreds of thousands of people laugh. Like, it's really terrible. Stressful. Like, and twice a week for, like, it's been with The Bachelor and The Bachelorette this year, it's been 4 months. And so it's like really, it's really intense. And by the end of the day, I'm just like really emotionally like drained and just like, and, but then the book, it was different, I guess, because it was just not, I'm not used to writing that kind of medium and not used to having that much time to plan things. And I actually I got a little caught up in I think, because with the Bachelor recaps it's so fast, you don't have time, like if a joke works or if it doesn't, you don't have time to think about it, you just put it on the page, you go. But when you're writing a book, like I kind of froze with how much time I had, like, to perfect it. Mm-hmm. I was really worried about perfecting it because I was like, well, I don't have the excuse of I only had 3 hours to do that, so if that joke didn't land, whatever. Like I had months to do this book, so if a joke doesn't land, it's because I suck. You know what I mean? Like, and so yeah. I was really, it's a different kind of pressure, but yeah.
And that's, I can't, because I've heard people say, anybody who's a critic, they say a good critic will take 3 hours to watch 60 minutes because you need to be, you know, sort of stop it, take some notes. I mean, you should be taking 3.5 hours just to, like, take in the content, let alone produce something.
It takes me about 2 hours to watch it. Yep. So, like, an hour episode will take me about 2 hours. And that's stopping, starting, writing notes, sort of coming up with jokes. And then I get about an hour and a half to another 2 hours, depending on how far they push the commercials. I'm usually racing the show. Like, I'll be writing about the first date while the first date's on television. I'm like, But yeah, it's not easy. But I'm lucky that I at least get it a couple hours early.
That's so true. Yeah, and but you, because I think I've read you say that you took about, was it a month, 3 weeks to a month to write this book, and it ended up taking you like seven months.
I took a month off to write the book. I was like, I'm an online writer. I write so fast. Like, it'd be easy. It was like part of my like in my sort of like book proposal to HarperCollins, I was like, oh my God, I'll knock this out in a few weeks. Like, I'm really quick. And yeah, I took a month off work to write it. And I went back to work 7 months later.
Wow. That's when you know you're like an MVP at work. When you're like, yeah, I'm going to need you to extend this 6 times.
They weren't thrilled.
Chris, you wrote a book in 7 months.
But it was, I didn't expect it to take me that long. And, you know, that's, I said goodbye to my advance pretty quickly because I didn't work for 7 months. So, but yeah, it took, I was surprised at how long it took me, but.
Was that, I mean, what were the hardest parts to write in the book?
You know, there was a lot of, because I've been in therapy for 11 years, and so, and I had, like, PTSD in my early 20s, which I write about in the book, and so I've spent a long time dealing with a lot of these memories and dealing with how they've affected my brain and stuff, and so I thought I was fine and that I'd dealt with it, and so when I sat down to write a lot of these really difficult stories, as a result of my PTSD, a lot of my memories of that stuff is really vivid anyway. But then it's a very different thing to sit down and write it in detail. And I thought I would be fine because I've been in therapy for so long. But then I just sort of had a bit of a meltdown writing the book.
Because writing, you can't just do like a shit happens. Like, you have to describe, you have to decide which word suits this incident. Like, you have to analyse it.
And relive so much of it.
Yeah. Yeah, you do have to relive so much of it. And you know, especially since I worked so hard to recover from my PTSD, where, you know, one of the symptoms of that is having sort of memories pop into your brain all the time that you can't get rid of. And then I had to, like, embrace the thing that I'd been learning to push away for so long. Like, I'd been learning to sort of not let those memories send me into a dark place and not let them take over my brain. And then I had to, like, just concentrate on them for months and months. So it was hard.
Cathartic for you? Did you find that you've worked anything else out during writing, or like feel differently about any of those memories now?
I say, people ask me that a lot, and at first I didn't know what to say because I was like, no, I had a total meltdown writing the book. It was a nightmare. But I think it feels cathartic now, like having the book and having everything that I wanted to say articulated in this little package there, that feels really cathartic, but the process of writing it wasn't. Yeah, it was hard, yeah.
Well, so what did Dorothy Parker said, I hate writing, but I love having written.
Yes, yeah.
Is that, yeah, yeah,
exactly, yeah.
So Sarah, do you want to take us through something that you wanted to touch on?
So I just want to ask, because you are constantly reading now in media that this is such a great time for women in comedy.
Yeah.
And you've got examples like Amy Schumer and Lena Dunham and too many that I can list.
Yeah.
And then I read a blog of yours recently on Hot Mess, Humble Bragging.
Yeah.
That just made me furious at the world. And I just wondered if you wanted to touch on that topic.
What made you furious about it?
I just thought it's like no matter what women are doing in the world, it just seems like no matter what successes they have, there's always this backlash.
Yeah.
So it's like no matter what you're doing, even if what you're doing is admitting to being not perfect, then somehow that's not good enough.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wrote that article on Hot Mess Humble Bragging because I'd read an article where someone, she'd written about how she was sick of women who are, like, you know, outwardly successful. So in a way that I am, like, I'm an author and I'm, like, quite well-known writer. But then I constantly talk about how, you know, I don't know how to cook and my house is a mess and how I'm, like, you know, terrible with men and I'll be single forever. And I always talk about how I'm a hot mess, like, and this woman wrote this article about how she was sick of women who clearly aren't doing that badly, trying to pretend like they're, like, haven't got their shit together. And I just found that so exhausting. I was like, oh my God, yes, I have a successful career, but I'm also allowed to be shit at other things. Like, and I just, and I was like, if Hot Mess Humble Bragging is a thing, like, then I guess I do it all the time. Like,
but
because
why
I...
This is the thing that annoys me so much, just as a person who enjoys comedians, like, obviously not as a comedian myself, but, like...
Amateur. Couple open mics. Yeah. Nothing else.
But, like, to be on the other side of that, obviously you would read an article like that and feel it in some sense as a criticism of what you do.
Mm.
I, as someone who enjoys what you do and who enjoys what Amy Schumer and Lena Dunham does, found it just infuriating that...
Yeah.
There's no, like, what's the alternative to be funny about having a perfect life?
Yeah, yeah, exactly,
and
right?
Why have men for so many decades or hundreds of years been able to be funny about the flaws in their life and not have Hot Mess Humble Bragging become a thing?
Yeah, I know. It's exhausting, like, and especially in online, I think, in the online sort of publishing world, it's, I mean, I'm part of it, but... They're so desperate for content and they're so desperate for opinion. And so sometimes you'll just read an opinion that pops up online, like about Hot Mess Humble Bragging, and you'll just be like, oh, get in the bin. Like, obviously, like, just like they had nothing, they just woke up and had a thought and wrote some words about it. And it's just exhausting. And you got to just, especially for women, like, I wrote another article recently just about how it is impossible to ever do anything right. Like, be successful, but not too successful. Or talk about your success, but also talk about your flaws. But if you talk about your flaws, then you're Hot Mess Humble Bragging. So don't do that either. So basically just sit still in a chair
There's
and never
no
move.
Way.
It's the Anne Hathaway effect, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's just detested worldwide and no one knows why.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you just can't. Just do what, you know, do what you do and God bless. You know, leave everyone up. Just exhausting.
Did you feel writing the book that it was nice not feeling like you were competing in a room for attention? That if someone, like, once the book was in their hands, you could really organically just be your voice. You didn't have to, I don't know. I mean, with online writing constantly, when as soon as you use that word content, which I hate, but that sort of thing, then it all becomes a product. Every word becomes a product, the sentence. Did you feel... piece when you were writing the book, just in the fact that people would be there with you and they weren't a click away, they weren't like, this isn't going to go viral enough, like it was already there in their hands.
Yeah, I did feel that. I mean, but at the same time, at Mamma Mia, I've never, and I think this is part of my success at Mamma Mia, is that I never sort of let myself be a slave to that stuff. we do have things like, you know, where we headline test and we can tell, I mean, everyone in online does this. You can tell like where on the exactly on the page someone stops reading and clicks away to another page. And so then, like, you know, you have the opportunity like, oh, well, if they stopped reading there, then maybe that line's not working and maybe put a picture in. But I never do that stuff. Like, I always just wrote the way I wanted to write, and I was always just really, I guess, kind of narcissistic and like overconfident in my ability to sort of, I just wanted to write the way I wanted to write, and luckily for me that's turned out quite well. But there is pressure click wise in online, but I sort of always ignored that stuff. My editors certainly didn't, but you know, I think that's part of why my writing tends to be so popular, is that I have quite a distinct voice because it's just my voice. Like, that's just how I write. Well, and I wouldn't be able to change it, really.
Yeah, and it's good. And you can tell that because a lot of stuff that I've read of yours, it's got that conviction that a lot of online writing, and in the book as well, it is like a... the person is, and I do it as well whenever I write blogs or anything for Booktopia, is that when you're writing it, you're aware that you're sort of feeling like you have to please somebody.
Yeah.
Whereas I think with a lot of your writing... there is really a, you know what, I'm just going to write. There's conviction behind it. And
such a strong voice that you really feel as though you're being spoken to personally.
Well, I've had some battles in the editorial room, sure, like about things that I think will work that they're not convinced will work. I mean, even I had to, I was doing the Bachelor recaps in my own time in the first season because they weren't convinced it would work. And I think you just have to... you have to back yourself, but then you also have to come up with the goods, I guess.
Yeah.
Which most of the time I do. I've had a lot of articles that have flopped as well, that, you know, where I've ended up with egg on my face, where my editors have said, we told you to change that, you know, tone or whatever. And I was like, no, I know. And then it just bombs and like 100 people read it. So, I mean, it's, but mostly I tend to, but I mean, if you're always going to write exactly how you want to write, it's, some of them are going
to
bomb.
That's true. And yeah. I mean, I think the greatest way to begin a sentence, anyone says, how was your day? And you say, I just had a disagreement with my editor. It was a nightmare. And you are not, like, everyone is going, oh, you're so much cooler than I am. Well, look, on that note, on that cool note.
Yeah.
Rosie, thank you so much for coming in. It's fascinating. Yeah, I can't tell you enough. Again, to people out there, if you're a Booktopia listener and you haven't bought this book, you're in the minority. We made that very clear.
So true.
So grab a copy of The Annie Cool Girl now. Rosie, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, guys. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.